Welcome on in to the 9 o'clock hour, the fourth and final hour of the program. It is Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you each and every weeknight here, 6 to 10, on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. A bunch to get into with our next guest as we head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in Trevor Lane, our good buddy from Front Office Show and Lakers Nation, host and talent there. Make sure you check out all things NBA with Trevor's coverage. Trevor, want to start, before we get into some Hawks intrigue here locally, today we found out that Rick Grosbeck is not going to be remaining the governor, so to speak, of the Celtics after the sale goes through. It's all about percentages of owning the team and a lot of other boring stuff. But what I want to ask you is, do you think this impacts anything that goes on with the Lakers?
It could. I mean, typically, if you're going to spend billions upon billions of dollars, you're going to want to have that final say. You're going to want to have decision making in that situation. So I'm not surprised that Wick Grosbeck is in the situation that he's in terms of no longer being the governor of the team. For the Lakers situation, though, reportedly it's in the contract, and I haven't seen the actual contract itself, but it's supposed to be in the contract that the Buss family will have the 15% ownership stake that they are required to have in order for Jeannie Buss to remain in that governor role. It's been the number of years that's been thrown out there has been roughly a 5-year period. But again, reportedly that's actually in the purchase contract for the team. So that would certainly change things a bit. But again, I still think that at the end of the day, if you're going to be the majority owner of the team and you're going to spend at a $10 billion valuation, which is what the Lakers were, you're going to want to have that final say. So while Jeannie may end up staying in that role, it'll be interesting to see how that dynamic ultimately unfolds.
Humor me here. I log on to Twitter yesterday, Trevor, and what do I see? A shirtless 40-year-old LeBron James doing deadlifts. Listen, nobody questions his work ethic, his commitment to his body, his ability to stay in ridiculous shape even at his age. Why? I don't understand it, Trevor. Like, we know you're ripped, LeBron. We don't need to see this from you at 40 years old. What do you think his motivation is for stuff like that at this point in his career?
LeBron, in terms of his motivation, he still has a drive to be great. He still has a drive to succeed as a basketball player, to continue to grow, to continue to improve. I'm sure he's trying to, everything LeBron does is very, very calculated. I'm sure he's sending a message that this is something that he's really taking seriously this coming season. He always does, but showing that he's putting in the work right now. Here we are mid-August, we're 6 weeks or so away from training camp, and he's putting in the work to be ready and be prepared for the season. So, you know, this will be a record. This will be the longest NBA career we've ever seen. This will be a version of LeBron James that, while he is going to be turning 41, also was sixth in MVP voting last year, was second team All-NBA, and is still an incredibly productive player. So we've never seen anything like this. We've never seen a player play at his age after this many years and continue to be this productive. So it's remarkable what he's doing. And I'll tell you what, if all this accomplishes, posting himself shirtless and all that and showing the kind of shape he's in, if all that does is get everybody else to get going too, then maybe we'll all benefit from that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if I was in that kind of shape, which I am not even on the same planet as LeBron James in terms of shape, I guess I'd post that too. Before we switch to some Hawk stuff here, Luca front, everything's still the same. Look good, feel good. Just keep his head down now and get ready for the season.
Yeah, Luka is going to be playing with Slovenia in Eurobasket. He already played one game with them, a tune-up game. They do have more. We'll see how many games he's going to play versus rest as they get ready for Eurobasket. But he looks to be in great shape. There's rumors that he's lost, you know, significant weight in terms of an exact number. The number 30 pounds has been bouncing around. I don't know how accurate that is or isn't. We'll have to see, you know, when the season starts. But Luka does look to be in phenomenal shape. He looks significantly slimmed down. I thought what we saw of him so far for Slovenia, he did look quicker. He did look more engaged on the defensive side of the ball. And that was for a brief period that he actually played. And even when he was playing, they kind of hid him off ball for a while so he wouldn't have to do a lot of heavy lifting. So it's not like we have a large sample size, but I think the hope is that we're going to see a very, very motivated, very in shape Luka coming into the season, and that he's going to be out to get some revenge on all the narratives that were out there about him coming out of his departure from Dallas. So it could be in for a big year for Luka Doncic. I'm excited to see what he can do for Slovenia once Eurobasket officially kicks off and they're really playing in competitive games.
Big deal or not a big deal, in your opinion, the reports that have surfaced over the last couple of days that the Hawks and Trae Young are not currently engaging in long-term contract talks, despite reports that Trae Young wants to?
I think it's a big deal. I mean, the team is – I think the Hawks have done a tremendous job building out this roster. I think this team is built about as well as you can to highlight Trae's strengths while mitigating or hiding his weaknesses. I think the army of wings that the Hawks have to deploy, rightfully so, I think are very impressive. I think they're guys that can help out on the defensive side of the ball and help, again, hide Trae there while still being finishers on the offensive end to take advantage of the passing that Trae provides. I like the addition of Kristaps Porzingis, the big man combo with Onyeka Okongwu there. I think Atlanta had a phenomenal, phenomenal summer, and I'm excited to see this team. But that, to me, is why it's surprising that we're not seeing an extension get done here. Now, this is the new NBA under a collective bargaining agreement that we're now a couple of years into, and we're seeing teams, particularly this summer, be much more careful with their long-term salary. Not everybody is just automatically being given a max contract, so maybe there is some element of uncertainty there where the Hawks want to see Trae get onto the floor. They want to see what this team really looks like together before they're going to commit long-term. But there's also the possibility that Trae could, you know, make an all-NBA team and then be eligible for a five-year contract and more money. And what might that potentially look like? So I'm a little bit surprised that this isn't just getting done right now, particularly in the wake of the De'Aaron Fox extension coming in at a full max. But it's not the end of the world either. Trae has the player option next year. He can opt out and then hit free agency. He could potentially leave the Hawks, but the way this team is structured, I think there's a lot of incentive for both sides to keep things together and keep moving forward. And maybe this is just about maintaining flexibility as long as possible, working on a Dyson Daniels extension, perhaps trying to find something there and then moving forward. I'm surprised, but it's not like, I don't think we should be ringing alarm bells at this point either.
Let me ask you this straight up. Who's a better basketball player, in your opinion, De'Aaron Fox or Trae Young?
Trae Young, and that's I like De'Aaron Fox a lot. I think he's the better defensive player, but Trae is a next level passer. I think he doesn't get enough credit. He very comfortably was the top assist guy in the NBA last season. I would predict him to do it again this season with this roster that he's got around him. Yes, his efficiency was maybe a little bit wanting on the offensive end, but he does tend to bounce back and forth with his three-point shooting percentage. I think he will have a bounce-back year this year, and this team is really structured very well around it. But ultimately, just in terms of which player would I rather have, Trae. Now, you can make the argument that it may be a little bit easier to build around De'Aaron Fox because his defensive acumen, while he's not a stud defensive player, he's also a better defender than Trae Young. Maybe that is a little bit easier to build around, but I do think that Trae, as a top-end talent, is on not a multi-tier jump, but I have Trae one tier up from De'Aaron Fox. So I would give him the nod for sure.
Speaking of comparisons, has your opinion of Quinn Snyder, the coach, changed since he had all that success in Utah and then hasn't been able to put things together here in Atlanta? Or do you think he's a victim of circumstance?
No, it hasn't necessarily changed. I still think that he's a talented coach. Now, if the team comes out and struggles this season with the roster assembled as it is, I mean, you can argue, well, you know, Jalen Johnson was hurt last season. Was your secondary creator out? Was that how many problems did that create? So I'm not ready to be totally out on Quinn Snyder or diminish his quality as a head coach. Sometimes things can just take a rough turn during the course of a season. I think this roster, though, is set up for success. And if he's not successful this season, then maybe it'll be time to have that conversation. But, again, the way this roster is structured, I think he's been given all the tools that he could possibly ask for to succeed, and I'm excited to see what he can do with this team this year.
Now that we've had a chance to look back at the draft and a lot of the free agent moves have been put in place, which teams do you think have had the best offseason so far?
Well, Atlanta is certainly one of them. I mean, you've got the Kristaps Porzingis move. You've got winning the Nikhil Alexander-Walker race and beating out a conference rival in the Detroit Pistons. You know, Atlanta, Detroit, Orlando, they're among the teams in the East that are looking around right now after the Celtics have taken a step back, and they're saying, why not us? Why can't we be the team to take that step forward and be the team to be the surprise finalist in the Eastern Conference, similar to what we saw the Indiana Pacers do last year? So I think Atlanta has had one of the best summers in the NBA. I will say Dallas, just by getting Cooper Flagg, they're automatically going to have a strong offseason. But I also thought the addition of D'Angelo Russell was very smart as somebody who can play on ball while Kyrie Irving is out, but also has the flexibility to play off ball when Kyrie does come back. So I thought that was a smart move. In addition to landing Cooper Flagg, that obviously moves them forward. Denver, I thought, was phenomenal with their summer. The trade that they made, sending out Michael Porter Jr., bringing back Cam Johnson, I thought that was an inspired move. And then getting Jonas Valanciunas, managing to get Tim Hardaway Jr. and Bruce Brown on veteran minimum deals, that was phenomenal. And then the Houston Rockets, another team, we can't skip them, landing Kevin Durant in trade. I thought he was the exact skill set that they were missing last year in the postseason. I think he'll be a great fit with this team. The moves they made, the flexibility they created with the deal that they signed Fred VanVleet to, I thought the Houston Rockets had a great summer as well. So I would pinpoint those four as, I think, having the strongest summers around the NBA.
All right, Trevor, before I let you go, I'm going to need your sleuth detective hat on here. Why are LeBron and AD posting the same thing on Instagram?
I saw that, and I have no idea. I have a lot of people asking me, what is this all about? And I have not reached out to anybody to dig a little deeper on it. I just kind of rolled my eyes and went, okay, well, I'm not going to worry about it too much because, it's nothing until it's something. The statement they put out was becoming the best version of yourself comes with a lot of goodbyes. That could mean just about anything. I mean, that could very well end up being a business-related thing. We had LeBron had an Amazon commercial earlier this summer where it was presented as though it was something involving his career, and then surprise, it was revealed to just be an Amazon commercial. You know, I'm not going to jump to any conclusions that they're posting something like this at the same time. It could be a clutch sports thing. I know a lot of people want to jump to, oh, this means, you know, LeBron wants to leave the Lakers, or Anthony Davis has got something in the works. I'm not gonna assume anything until something is made more clear, but. You know, it's a true statement with tons of deniability, which LeBron is absolutely phenomenal at putting out stuff like that and keeping people talking. So, again, I won't jump to any conclusions on what this is or isn't or anything like that.
Yeah, it's fascinating how the athletes of 2025, Trevor, are addicted to social media in a way that leaves us hanging on the thread of their fingertips because – like, again, we're sitting here as sports fans going, what does that mean? Is LeBron trying to go to Dallas? Is AD trying to go back to LA? What's going on here, Trevor? I don't understand. But you're right. At the end of the day, it's most likely nonsense. Appreciate the time as always, right, my friend. We'll be checking you out online, and we'll chat soon.
And no problem. Thank you for having me.
All right. That is Trevor Lane there, front office sports and Lakers Nation. All right. When we get back, we'll ask our local perspective now. We got the national perspective. Now we'll get the local perspective. Is there something going on with Trae Young, or is there not? Caleb Johnson's answer, very different than what Trevor Lane just had to say. So national versus local perspective, and then we'll finish out the hour with more Falcons conversation, of course, with the joint practices continuing tomorrow. Busy 9 o'clock hour to finish up the show next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as the Mets hit another home run. Is he mad? Is he not? What's going on with Trae Young, man? The cryptic social media posts are coming back out. Ugh. Let's head out to the Wait4.com hotline. Caleb Johnson, our Hawks insider. We'll talk some dogs as well. Every time I talk to you, this thing keeps getting more and more messy. Our guy Jake Fisher, who appears to have a beat on this thing, reported yesterday that there's no talks going on right now between Trae Young and the Hawks, and that that's really not going to change, and at least over the summer. And Trae Young is posting videos of himself jamming out to new music and commenting underneath other people's posts. What is the latest in as the Trae Young contract world turns here?
Yeah, Chris, I feel like you're wanting some drama here. I don't know that there's a whole ton of it, but what I will say is, based on Jake Fisher's reports, it kind of solidified similar things that I had heard, but he had more details, which is essentially that the Ansi Salehe and the Hawks were not interested in giving Trae Young a max contract. And rightfully so, Trae Young is looking for a max contract, especially after you saw De'Aaron Fox be given a max deal by the San Antonio Spurs. Now, I and a lot of other people are looking at what the Spurs just did and think that contract's going to look really ugly in a couple of years. And I feel like there's going to be conversations later on down the road if Victor Wembanyama is able to stay healthy and the Spurs get competitive, of a thing that's going to hold him back is De'Aaron Fox's contract, because it's going to keep them close to that, you know, getting between the first and second apron and all those sorts of things. And the thing that is really good about Ansi Salehe running the show in Atlanta is he comes from managing the cap in Atlanta, and previous to that in Golden State, previous to that in San Antonio. So, like, his probably the first thing on his brain is trying to see how this is all going to work out within the luxury tax and the salary cap. And what wouldn't work, if they're going to continue to build this thing out, is to give Trae Young a max deal. We've seen where, and even Trae himself has been on the record in the past and said, I don't have to be the top guy. Now, is Trae still a star? Yes. And is he someone that you want on your team? I think if you're the Hawks, yes, because I think you've built a lot of your team around him being kind of the centralized piece that keeps the offense going. But you obviously want to add to that as well. And so he's in that awkward area where a lot of the times teams would just give him the max contract, but it seems like the Hawks aren't willing to do that. And so there's not a whole lot to negotiate, quite honestly. If Trae's agent is going, hey, we want the max, and if Ansi and the Hawks are going, we're not giving them the max, then it's like, okay, well, let's let this thing play out. I think the positives that we have, and the reason why I wouldn't be concerned of any sort of trade going down or anything like that, is that Trae and Quinn are on the same page, and I think they both see the benefit of working with one another. And because of that, I think Trae does still does and has always wanted to be in Atlanta, and they can work on something when he does become a free agent, because when that happens next year, they will own his bird rights. So they will be able to give him the most amount of money. The only thing that would change this is if we end up in a season where Jalen gets hurt and Kristaps gets hurt and they're not competitive again, then maybe Trae goes, hey, I'll look at my options elsewhere. And maybe the Hawks go, yeah, it's a little bit better for us to reset. But that's a long, long, long way away, and a long-winded way of saying that I'm not super concerned that an extension didn't end up happening.
So, to the best of your knowledge, it doesn't at least appear that Trae feels like the Hawks are acting in bad faith.
I don't think so. I think, like, he's still going to be an athlete. He's still going to be a confident guy who is going to throw some shots out there, because he wants to be paid a max deal, and he thinks he deserves it. And I understand from his perspective why he thinks he deserves a max contract, especially, like I said, when you see other guys in the league that you feel you're and quite literally are better than a guy like a De'Aaron Fox. I understand why he would be frustrated that they're not going out of their way to keep him around long term, and that's why he's going to jump in the Micah Parsons thing and kind of stir that up. But I don't think he thinks, at least from my understanding, he doesn't think they're going about this in bad faith. He's just frustrated that they don't lock him down long term with the most amount of money.
Okay, so flipping over to the UGA side of things now. It is list season, so we take it with a grain of salt, but ESPN put out their preseason all-conference teams. SEC featured one dog, and that was punter Brett Thorson. So no real playmakers make the list for the all-SEC first-team preview by ESPN. Does that surprise you?
I guess no, because I think what Georgia offensively is dealing with right now is what a lot of teams are dealing with, just maybe specifically in other areas, which is their biggest pieces on offense, I would expect to have either not played very much or have transferred in from another school. See, I mean, you know, when you think a guy like Nate Frazier, like he was a freshman last year. He showed flashes, but he had to wait his turn and you know, kind of take the opportunities that he was presented. And it was funny, like he wasn't even trusted to run the type of way that he likes to run until later on in the season. Kirby Smart came out and was like, yeah, like he wants to bounce things outside and I want him to go north and south. And so, you know, he kind of chastised Nate at one point, and then Nate was given the opportunity in a practice to bounce it outside, and he was able to use his speed to get past the defenders, and Kirby was like, okay, like you got it now. You know, so it's one of those, I think Zachariah Branch, you know, the wide receiver who transferred from USC, I think there are pieces of this offense, and that's before you even get to the quarterback, that are unproven because they either weren't with this team last year, they were playing for somebody else, or they didn't get a whole lot of opportunity. And so I wouldn't think Gunnar Stockton would, you know, kind of make that list. And then you are going to like Oscar Delp. But even he was a bit inconsistent at times last year and I think has a bit more to prove. And so while I find Kirby Smart's team still really talented, and I think they're better than Clemson, and seeing the AP poll come out and Clemson being ahead of Georgia is strictly based on, I think, people voting with, well, we're familiar with Cade Klubnik and we know what he showed flashes of last year in a longer, you know, kind of a span. And so this is the season for, in these first couple of games, beginning with Marshall, where Georgia is going to have to prove to a lot of people of, yeah, we may not have played and been a big part of this team last year, but we can play and we're still pretty good.
Do you think Texas gets the love at number one mostly because of Arch Manning, or is it a combination of the guys that they're returning to? Because obviously when you think storylines, you think Arch Manning.
Yeah, I mean, Arch is part of that. But you can't just completely ignore that element of it all. But Steve Sarkisian put together a really, really good football team last year that obviously, you know, was right there in the mix of trying to compete for a national championship. I think, you know, if things had gone just a little bit different, quite honestly, in the SEC championship game, they're winning that one and maybe have a, you know, they would have had a completely different route in order to pull off a championship, and maybe they find themselves in the game itself. So I think based on recruiting, based on the results on the field last season, and then yes, the hype around Arch Manning is so real. I have been one who I'm like, why do y'all believe that Arch is any better than Gunnar Stockton? Like, I feel like we saw them in about similar scenarios, especially at the end of last season, and they both came up short, and it kind of felt like the moment was a bit too big when both Gunnar and Arch got their opportunities. And so with that, it's like, yeah, just because the last name is there, just because the skill set is promising doesn't mean that's going to turn into any results. Like, this is all projection. And if you're telling me that you're holding back guys at Georgia because they're unproven, you then can't use your same arguments to convince me that Arch Manning has shown us enough to be amongst that, oh, he's an early Heisman favorite and all that sort of a thing. And so, I mean, I do think Texas deserves to be where they're at. It's wild to me that they, being the number one team on what, the AP poll, and then being not favorited in their first game because they're taking on Ohio State. I think that I saw a stat the other day. It's the first time since 1978 that that's the case, where they're the number one team in the country, but they're not favorited in their first game. So they've got their opportunity to prove it right out of the gate. I think Georgia has to wait until they face Tennessee to really convince people, because otherwise, like, these first couple of weeks is just going to be a, Georgia could throw anybody out there. Texas gets that opportunity right out of the gate to show that they are worth, kind of being placed on the pedestal in the way that they are.
Tennessee, Ole Miss, or Florida, which one of those three teams scares you the most that Georgia has to play?
Honestly, it's Florida, because I think DJ Lagway, the way that he kind of progressed last season, and I know there were so many jokes about that Florida Gator team, but I think quarterback play obviously impacts so much of what you're able to do, as a team, obviously offensively. And I think what Lagway brings that Florida Gator offense, I think a lot of people are going to sleep on them. Like, I don't think Georgia is going to sleep on Tennessee, because they've been there time and time again. And even though, even though Nico is not there anymore, they're still going to be somewhat of a competitive team. Ole Miss caught you sleeping last year. Like, this has been kind of a reoccurring thing, it's felt like, with Ole Miss. And so I think the awareness is more there for those two games. It's Florida, who has been more of a cupcake type atmosphere. Now this is going to be the last year, that they play in Jacksonville before they go take a couple of seasons away as Jacksonville Stadium gets renovated. And so I feel like Florida for sure is that team that wants to upset a lot of people, wants to surprise a lot of people. And I hope Georgia's ready for it.
Caleb, appreciate the time as always. Looking forward to continuing to talk some dogs. We are just I think we can count it by days now, Caleb, which just makes us all salivate at that thought. Appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
All right. Sounds good, man.
All right. That is Caleb Johnson there. Appreciate his time as always, as he joins me each and every Tuesday talking Hawks. And now we're talking dogs as the football season gets underway. We're certainly not talking about the Braves, because it's now 13-5 against the Mets.
And Alvarez and Alonso are having pretty decent nights.
I think Pete Alonso just passed Darryl Strawberry for the Mets home run record, actually, with that one. So how about that? When we get back, what did Jesse Bates have to say about the state of the defense and how things went today? You'll hear the defensive El Capitan speak when we get back to Close Up Shop. It is Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, on a Tuesday. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app. Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you until the top of the hour. Before we let you hear from Jesse Bates, what he had to say after the scrimmage today, Oren, did you see Shohei Ohtani back in the news for the wrong reasons today?
Yeah.
I'm going to read
this. He and his business manager doing some bad stuff.
An Ohtani rep getting in some shady shenanigans.
How about that?
Where have we seen that before? All right. This was a story filed to ESPN. A Hawaii real estate investor and broker are suing Shohei Ohtani, claiming the Dodger star and his agent got them fired from a $240 million luxury housing development on the Big Island's coveted Hapuna Coast, and that they brought them in to endorse. According to the lawsuit filed in Hawaii Circuit Court, Ohtani's agent Nez Balillo increasingly demanded concessions from developer Kevin J. Hayes Sr. and real estate broker Tomoko Matsumoto before demanding that their business partner, Kingsburn Reality Capital, drop them from the deal. So essentially using their status and privilege to be like, yo, this is how we're going to run this ship, and you can either get in line or get behind, and we're going to see you later. Is Shohei Ohtani just messing with the wrong people here? Or
I don't know, man.
What is going on with the man with the billion-dollar contract? Does he need to be fooling around in these types of shenanigans with Hawaiian real estate developers and all this crap? I don't think so.
Just play baseball, Shohei.
Like, you got a $700 million deal.
Worry about pitching. Don't worry about anything
else. Seriously, is that not good enough? Ugh. We talked about this last night with the Myles Garrett thing. For those who missed it, Myles Garrett was going 100 miles an hour in a 60-mile-an-hour zone, and he got a ticket, and he's going to get in trouble because you can't be going 40 miles an hour over the speed limit, especially doing triple dig. These athletes, like, again, and I said it last night, and it's worth repeating now. Myself, Oren, and I would guess 99.99999% of you that are out there listening to me, and thank you for doing so, we don't understand these problems. These are not problems that even as first world problems we can compute in our brains, because we'll never have $700 million to invest in a $240 million Hawaiian housing development. We'll never have the ability or the thought process, the hubris is the word I'm looking for, to think that we can drive 100 miles an hour in a 60-mile-an-hour zone and be bigger than that and be better than that. These aren't things that cross our minds. So anytime a story like this comes to fruition, I'm just baffled. Like, Shohei Ohtani, global icon, and that is not an exaggeration. He's 100,000 times more popular in Japan than he is here. He is Babe Ruth in Japan, and that is not an exaggeration. There's Sadahara Oh from the Giants there in Japan, and there's Shohei Ohtani. Those are there's been players that have come over to the U.S. that have been famous. Hideo Nomo, Hideki Matsui. There have been players from Japan and Korea that have come over and made hay. Hell, Matsui was a World Series MVP in 2009 with the Yankees. Nothing like Ohtani. Ohtani is a demigod in Japan. And for him, with all of the endorsements, all of the salary that he's getting from Major League Baseball, to even be remotely associated now with not one but two incredibly high-profile incidents involving a lot of money in very nefarious ways is just unendingly baffling to me. Like, you have the most charmed, beautiful life the day after the World Series ends, if you make it there, or the day after you get eliminated from the postseason. Shohei Ohtani could spend his entire offseason, Oren, buying villages in countries around the world.
Just at his leisure.
And just saying, this is where I'm going to live every November.
Yeah, give me 9 days, I'll move.
Yeah, I'm going to go live off of Costa Rica and the islands for 9 days every 2 months. Then I'm going to go to the south of France, and I'm going to get an apartment across the street from the Eiffel Tower. And then I'm going to go to Italy, and I'm going to buy a street in Rome and open up a restaurant. You know, he could literally do those things. Why? On the face of the earth, would you stick your nose, even remotely, into crap like this? Whether it's betting, whether now it's housing developments, $240 million housing development, Oren, 240. I mean, this is big time, high rolling stuff. Now that for the second time, he's being at the minimum associated with.
There's an attachment.
Why? For the life of me, he's got a cute dog, a nice wife. He could have a litter of kids if he wanted to and give them the best life they could ever imagine. Why would you smear your name doing stuff like this? Why? You don't need to. Your endorsements in Japan and the U.S. and your salary for the rest of your life in baseball. You couldn't spend all that money if you tried. You couldn't spend all that money if you gave it to 25 people and your closest friends to try. You couldn't spend it if you gave it to 100 of your closest friends to try. With that contract from the Dodgers and his endorsements, during the lifetime of his active MLB career, Oren, he will make well north of $1 billion. Well, I mean, I'm telling you, if you don't understand how much this guy is revered and idolized in Japan, just do some research. This guy is Brad Pitt mixed with LeBron James, mixed with everybody. The Mount Rushmore of Mount Rushmores is Shohei Ohtani in Japan. He will never pay for a meal. He will never pay for anything. No flights, no hotels. He is a god in Japan. And then he has a $700 million contract in the States, plus endorsements from New Balance and others. And to stick your nose into this type of crap, or to be as inefficient as this, not once but twice, in determining who to have around you, what people to trust, what people to get in bed with, to get in business deals with. You have to be smarter. You have to be better. I don't think he's a bad guy from all accounts. Seems like everybody likes him. Seems like he gets it. Seems like he's fit in the U.S. and in the majors just fine. But, you know what? It's funny. It says this in the article further down. Investment in the material for the Vista at Muna Kea Resort, which remained online Monday night, listed Hayes and Matsuyama as part of the management team along with Kingsbarn. It called Ohtani, quote, Japan's Babe Ruth and the first resident, giving him top billing ahead of the iconic Muna Kea Resort. It says it in the article. I didn't even see that part until I was scrolling down. This is a long article. And I read the first three paragraphs during the break to make sure I knew what I was talking about. And now I've been scrolling ever since, making sure I didn't miss anything important. Oh, how about the fact that everything I just said for the last 5 minutes was literally verified in the article? This guy is a god in Japan. He doesn't need this. These athletes, man, like, you know what I wonder, Oren? And I was going to play Jesse Bates, but now we're off on this tangent. And I'm rolling, and I'm just going to go with it. Jesse Bates, we played it earlier in the show. It's available online at odyssey.com. Like, when you become someone of that ilk, Miles Garrett, Shohei Ohtani, what's the name of the Raiders? Henry Ruggs. Guys that get to that echelon of fame and performance and best in the world at what you do, like, at what point along the way do you lose sight of what I'm talking about? That's my biggest question, right? Like, is it 15? Is it 20? Is it the first contract that's seven digits? Like, where is it? Where along the way do these guys who, if they did nothing but play sports and live their life, could live the best life any of us could ever dream of? Why are they always sticking their hands in the cookie jar? Whether it's racing, whether it's cheating, whether it's gambling, whether it's real estate, why are all of these high-profile men and women with everything to lose choosing with free will to not only stand next to the line, Oren, but happily with both feet jump across it? Like, do they just not get enough out of life? Like, do they, the rush of Ohtani hitting a home run, does he just need to feel that every day? Like, because the risk of a $240 million hotel venture going sideways and you getting exposed, I would think would give you the same type of adrenaline rush as hitting a game-winning home run. I would think. You know, does Myles Garrett needing to go 100 miles an hour in a 60-mile-per-hour zone give him the same type of rush as sacking the quarterback? Like, that's what I wish I could understand, and I never will. Never. Ever, 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 and neither will, again, 99.99999% of you. So it's just fascinating. This is 2 days in a row now, high profile, in one case the highest profile athlete in their sport, potentially getting themselves in hot water again for the second time. We'll see what happens. It's just this stuff, no matter how many days we cover it, how many times we try to break it down, I'll never understand. If I was somebody that had all of that wealth and had all of those riches and was going to support my family for the next, you know, 50 years and more, I would cherish that. That would be enough for me, but I guess it's not for some of these athletes. All right, great job on the show today. Thanks to O. Thanks to all my guests. Appreciate everybody that responded. Go vote on the poll at CT Tonight, 929, if you haven't already. Can the Falcons have a top five offense this year? I think they can. What do you think? Go vote on the poll at CT Tonight, 929. We'll be back tomorrow and Thursday. Got a little abbreviated action. Warren, we got Corky Kell starting tomorrow on the radio station. How about that? So I'll be with you for a 2-hour sprint. Dare I say, the fastest 2 hours on the radio station? Oh, boy. Don't let that get back to Stakey. Oh, boy. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app. This has been Chris Thomas Tonight.